continuation of an oral history interview with Betty Borg. And today is the 30th of August, 2005, and this is tape number MPFH21, side A. Great. Now, Betty, how many children were in your family?
Just me. Me and a pussycat.
You sort of regret not having any brothers and sisters?
I do now. I do now. As I got older, I do, because, well, I think, too, another thing, I think that's why we bonded so much, a lot of us around there, you know, with each other, too, you know, because this friend I have up at the Central Coast, there was three girls in her family, but I was always with them, you know, so at that time I didn't sort of miss not having brothers or sisters, you know, with them, because that, and as I said, the children around there were all friendly, and you didn't, you know, worry about brothers or sisters. Probably I had the better life, because I had no arguments in amongst the brothers and sisters. But as I've got older, I would have appreciated, you know, at least a brother. I can see with my daughter and my son, there's 7 years between them, but they're as close as if there were 12 months between them, you know, and that. And that's how I look at it. And my husband's family, my husband, there was seven or eight in his family, you know, and even though he came from overseas, I was more or less accepted into that family, you know, which way. And I find a difference if you haven't got a sibling as you get older to call on, yeah.
We haven't spoken much about school. You attended 4th Street Primary School, but that's the old one, you said, right?
That's the old one. The high school building is still there. Where the Carl Expressway goes around, that was our building. And they pulled that down, and that was during the war years, and they built that new one. It's up on Observatory Hill now. And we went into that in 1942.
Right. Tell me a little bit about the teachers and that sort of taught you at the school. Who were they? What were their names? What was it like there?
The first teacher I had was Miss Bousfield. She was really nice, very nice lady. She taught us in the lower classes. There was a Mrs. Dunn, and we all, as we start to take notice, we all used to watch her fashions, how she was. She, at that time, if you had nail polish and things like that, it was something, you know. And that's how she used to dress, but they were nice. We had Mr. Rouse, he was the headmaster there. Mrs. Preston Stanley, she was one of our teachers. She was also my music teacher, and after school one day a week. And I used to go up with her to Paling's, a music shop in George Street, and that's where she used to have teach the music. And then we had another gentleman that used to give us the cane if we played up. He had one arm, but the other arm used to work hard. Mr. Gould. And they were nice. The teachers were nice. So we used to have fun in that. And they made sure that we had clean hands before we went into school. We had a small tuck shop in the school where you could buy some things. I can't remember much about that because I didn't buy much things. And up there on Observatory Hill, there used to be a tennis court up there, just where the school, along where the school is now. And because I remember that, my mother used to bring my lunch up to me if I didn't get the benefit of buying it once or twice like that. And she used to have it in what they used to have, the tins of lollies then, and she'd have it in that. And we used to get milk. The milk was allotted to us of a daytime, and we'd have the milk like that. There used to be an old playground on the corner of Watson Road and the park there, but up at Observatory Hill. It was, everything was wooden in that, and dusty. The dusty was the ground, but they pulled that down when they were doing all the new demolishings up there. But we'd have our school concerts. And we'd play a little bit of sport. We didn't have much sport there, but Paddington, we used to have go swimming, and we used to, have our sports day and go to Centennial Park and play, like, softball, they called it then. But I wasn't one much for sport. That was another thing.
What about your mum? I mean, how would she entertain herself with the other mothers? What would they do during the day? Because they weren't working, most of them.
They'd have once a week down the City Mission, they'd have a meeting. You know, they'd have a religious meeting at the City Mission. They'd go down there like that. They'd go do mostly shopping and things like that. Or they'd sit on the doorstep and talk. Yeah? If you went to the shop, up until they moved me from Munn Street to Windmill Street, and I forget what year they moved me down there, but if you went to the shop, you wouldn't close your front door. You go to the shop and you'd come back, and it'd still be your house, would still be there, and that. And if Mum would be washing the stairs down, you know, to keep it clean at the front. So while she got that time, she'd had a hose. She'd wash the stairs down, and she'd hose the front of the other lady's house and the other lady's house. Well, I did that when they moved me to Windmill Street. I used to, if I was doing the front of the house with the hose, as far as the hose had stretched to the other houses, I'd hose them down. And they'd do the same for me. Like even here at Brighton, I've got the neighbour next door. My garbage bin's out, and I haven't brought it in, she puts it in my front gate. And I do the same for her. We get the papers delivered here, the local paper, and we've got a lazy fella at the moment, he throws it from a car, and we find it all along the footpath. Well, my habit is, and so was my next door neighbour, because she was brought up the same way, about three houses either side, we put the papers in. We pick ours up and we see them on the footpath, we don't leave them.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, remember that you told me about the old hotel that was demolished and the Latta family lived in it?
Yeah.
Do you remember the name of that hotel, what it was called?
No, I can't think of it.
That's the one that had the tunnel underneath it, isn't it?
That's the one that had the tunnel.
With the rings on the walls?
Yeah.
For the convicts?
For the convicts.
Did they tie them up there?
They used to tie the convicts up of a night time, chain them. I was told that's what they used to do. And the Hero Waterloo Hotel, around there on the corner of Windmill and Lower Fort Street, that has the cellar with the trap door in it. And one of the local families, she's passed away now, the nun from that family, but they were, I can't think of what it was, she was a Catholic nun at St. Patrick's Church. Finnan was her name, yeah, Mary Finnan. And that's how we got to know, because my mother grew up with her too. See, Mum wasn't Catholic, and she grew up with her, but they were still friends. And that's got the cellar door, the trap door, where it used to drop down, and they take the sailors back to the ship. Shanghai them, they used to call them, take them back to the ship. But the hotel where we used to play, and with the latest one, it had this passageway and it had the cells with the rings on it. And that was because they used to chain the convicts so they didn't escape.
Did you actually see those rings yourself?
Yeah, I've seen the rings, yeah.
Is it still there?
The hotel's not there.
Oh, the hotel went, that's right.
The hotel, they pulled the whole lot down. It's a shame what they done. It is really a shame. Even down Roden's Lane, that's the laneway, it's opposite the Palisade in Beddington Street, there was a blacksmith shop. I don't know whether it's still there or not, because my grandfather used to send me down with his bale hook, you know, to get it sharpened and fixed up. Down the blacksmith, I've seen the blacksmith shop, used to go in there and see the blacksmith working. And that is right in the corner of that lane there. But I don't know if it's still there, because when I go back, I just go to the reunion and I go home, because I don't like what they've done.
Now, Betty, you left school about 15 and started working at Bushells. You've already told us about that. When you were a teenager, what kind of entertainment did you make for yourself?
Well, mostly we used to just listen to the radio, or we'd gather on the corner, as I told you, and that milk bar and vegetable shop up in Argyle Place. We used to go up there and we'd all gather around outside the shop, or we'd go in and if we had money, we'd buy a milkshake. He didn't mind the chap up there, because he was a local chap too, you know. His name was Furlong, and he let us go in there. And then Charlie Condren took it over. He was a local chap. And he used to like us, you know, being up there, to keep an eye on us, more or less. We used to go to the movies, as I told you, on a Sunday night, and up the church hall. We used to go to the town to the movies, or we just go, more or less, go fishing, or gather at each other's place or something like that, and pass the time, because, you know, your pocket money wasn't big.
Did you also dance?
Yeah.
Tell me about the places you used to dance at.
I never used to go to the Trocadero. I used to go to Surreyville if I felt like to go there. That was the one that had the springs under the floor. I'd go to Seagars, over to Luna Park, to the floating one at Luna Park, or out to the Albert Palais, because the Leichhardt tram used to come to Miller's Point, so therefore it would take us to the Albert Palais, you know, so we were about that. But usually we used to walk home from the dances in the city, and no worry about being molested or anything like that, you know. We'd walk home and that would pass the time. We'd go into town, we'd go up Oxford Street. Oxford Street was full of shops, like nice shops in Oxford Street. And we might get the tram up to the top from the quay and walk home. And we'd go down all, I don't know how many shops we went in and out of, you know. And we used to love to go into Mark Foy's, because it had a big bird cage up in the middle of it with the birds in it. It was beautiful inside. That's where the courts are now, in that building there. And there was shops all the way to the railway. We had shops all the way to the railway. And they were shops, you know, not like there'd be dress shops and shoes stores and other things for the, you know, everything, food stores, you know. And that's what I was saying, just down that Wolf's, I was telling you, that Wolf's, the butchers that used to send the food to the mission, that was just down from the court in Liverpool Street, where the courthouse is. And it used to go from that Liverpool Street into George Street. It'd go around the corner of where they got Hungry Jack's or something now. It'd go around behind that, you know, come out there. And that's what we used to do. We used to walk a lot. Or we used to gather, you go and sit up on the park and talk. Eh? Or walk around the lower road, come back up through the Argyle Cutting. And that.
Now, Betty, tell me, how did you meet your husband? And tell me a little bit about him.
Well, I left Bushells because I was a bit fed up, and I left Bushells and I went to work as an usherette in what they called the Civic Theatre down in the Haymarket. And I stayed there for about 12 to 18 months, if it was that. And we had a habit of going back talking to some of our friends in Bushells. You know, if you left there, you go back and have lunch with them or something like that. And this day, poor lady, she said to me, are you happy where you're working? And I said, no. I said, I don't like the shift work, you know, and that. And she said to me, well, I've got a position if you want to come. She said, I'll welcome you back. So she took me back. I gave notice that week at the theatre and I went back, and this Maltese girl was working there. And she said to me, well, come to the Trocadero with me on Saturday night. And I thought for a while, and then I said, all right, I'll go with her. And my husband was there. She introduced me to him. And that's how I met him. But I didn't start going with him until a couple of weeks later. We went to Seagars, and he was at Seagars, and we ended up walking home. And that.
Your husband's from Malta, isn't he?
He came from Malta, yeah. He came in 1949 from Malta. And I met him about 6 months after he came, because my father-in-law, when he came here, he asked me, he said, was I waiting at the wharf? He said, for him. Yeah, I met him down the Trocadero, but then we actually started going out from Seagars, and we were married in 1951. So 2 years after he came here, we got married.
How often would you go dancing? How many nights a week?
5 out of 7.
Wasn't much time for anything else.
The sixth night I go to the movies.
Now, just before we leave the war years, I remember you told us already that you used to see the soldiers depart from the wharf. But yeah. You told me earlier about a lady who used to sing a song. Tell me about that.
There was a lady, Dalgetty's Wharf, as I told you, it goes down, it went down Munn Street and came back out into Dalgetty Hill there. She used to stand on that point of the wharf, on the furthest point in towards the thing, and she'd sing as the ship would go out. And she'd sing what I was known to be told at that time, the Maori's farewell. And it was Now Is the Hour song, when they say goodbye. And she'd sing it. And every ship would go out, she'd be there singing it. And where she come from, she wasn't a local. And she used to sing that when the ship used to pull out.
Was that a popular song at the time, the Maori's farewell?
Yeah, it was. It was. That's what I don't know what the actual name, but that's how we knew it, as the Maori's farewell. But it was. I think it was Now Is the Hour. Now I'm older. Is the song.
The Hour.
Yeah. Now Is the Hour when we must say goodbye.
Oh, Now Is the Hour. Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. All those things that don't happen anymore, huh?
You're not kidding.
Where did you get married, actually, Betty?
I was married in St Mary's Cathedral. And actually, on Malta Day. It was the 8th of September.
Walter?
Malta.
A Malta Day.
Maltese Day, yeah. It was their national day.
That was good. Was that worked out in advance?
Pardon?
Did your husband work that out in advance?
No, he didn't. We just, picked that date, and because there were some papers had to come from Malta, and my sister-in-law, one-to-be, she was expecting a baby and she wanted to be bridesmaid, so I had to wait so that she had the baby. So we waited a month afterward for her to have the baby and that. And we were married there in Maltese at St Mary's Cathedral.
That must have been very nice.
It was nice, but it was windy. It was a windy day, but it was a nice day. But we had the reception not in these flash palaces that they have them now. We had them in what they call the Abraham Mott Hall in Miller's Point. And we had to get a caterer, Mum had to get a caterer to do it, you know. And that, that's where we were. That was the in thing then, but you didn't go to all these flash places to have it, like they have now.
I'm sure it was very good. Now, can you tell me a bit more about the arrival of migrants in Miller's Point? Did people come in the 50s from other places in Europe and so on?
They came in down Circular Quay and down in Walsh Bay, the migrants. And my father had come out of the Navy then, and he was a customs officer. And we used to go down and watch them come in. Little did I know I'd get one. And my dad did, say, I'm working around this way today. You come down and have a look at them coming in. I've got a migrant ship coming in, things like that.
Did they come in at Circular Quay?
They came in at Circular Quay. And they used to come in at Woolloomooloo too. But Circular Quay is where the overseas terminal is. It, as I said, it was the old wharf there too. And over the other side, near the Opera House, there was a big wharf as well, and they came in there as well.
Now, do you also remember them coming to live at Miller's Point in the area? Did they sort of start to live there?
No, there was no migrants much came around Miller's Point. I think I brought the second one around, but they never came around there. They mostly all went up around East Sydney and around Woolloomooloo. And up, you know, around Surrey Hills, all that area, and a lot of them went out because they had to have what they call a sponsor to come out here. They had to have a job ready for them to come out here. Otherwise, they weren't allowed to come, you know, and they had to have good medical background to come out here.
Sure.
Right. Now, you moved to 19 Windmill Street. Yeah. This is when you got married, isn't it?
No, I went to live in with my grandfather next door in 18A Munn Street when I first got married. Okay.
Tell me about that house. Oh, that was just next door, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was next door. That was across the stairway.
So just identical to the one you were living in, was it?
No. It when you went in that one, you went in the hallway. There was a bedroom to the right. There was another room to the left, which went out onto the veranda. You went through that room onto the veranda. Up the end of the small hallway was another big room. That went out onto the veranda as well, one long veranda. Then as you passed that first room on your right coming in, there was the kitchen door, and you went into a huge kitchen. It was an eating kitchen, very big room. Then you went out, they had two big windows facing onto a stairway which went up onto the roof. They had a roof yard up there. And then from the kitchen door, when you went out to the laundry on your left, and off the laundry ran the bathroom. And then a little bit to your right, out the kitchen door, you go a bit further and you come to where they had the outside toilet. And there was a gate that you opened up and you threw your rubbish down there. And the rubbish bin used to be a big square metal box. And the garbage men used to open the gate from the street and take the box out and empty it. That was for the upstairs flats. But now they've changed it and they've put stairs from the street at the back up into that back of that flat. How, I don't know, but they've done it, you know, and that. But that's where I lived for, I think it was about in the 70s, and they moved me to down to Windmill Street, which was a terraced house. That was number 19, and that was three doors up from to where my mother lived, or two doors up from where my mother was born in Windmill Street.
Right. What was that house like?
It was big, very big. It you went in the front, there was a front fence and a nice veranda. Then you went up the steps and a step into the front door, and there was a staircase facing you, which went upstairs to three bedrooms and a veranda upstairs. And the biggest room upstairs was 14 feet by 16 feet. That was my front bedroom. Then the other one was about nine. It was a narrow sort of 9 feet by something. It was the middle room. And the back room, that would be about 10, 12 feet square at the back. But then downstairs, as you went in, there was a door on your left-hand side that took you into another front room, which was fairly large. Then you had a walk-through room, and that was as big as the bedroom upstairs. And the kitchen was small, but you had to go outside for the bathroom and the laundry and everything like that, with a narrow yard which ran along. And before we moved down there, we asked them permission to alter it a bit for our own convenience, so we didn't have to go outside. But then Housing Commission came along, and because I had a daughter not married and I had the son who was training to be a priest and no money coming in from him, the Housing Commission practically chased us out with high rents, that what we were paying in rent to the Maritime, to what we started to pay to the Housing Commission, because they'd taken into account how many rooms I had, you know, like an income coming in, and that, and they had a show, my husband had to show whatever overtime he had to, you know, to with the income. That didn't matter if he was saving for things or, like, we had to keep my son because he was a young man then, he was nearly 21, you know. And we decided, well, what's the use of paying dead money? Let's pay the money off a house, so we saw what we had, finance and everything, and we shopped around, and we ended up moving out here, to much to my dismay, but now I'm glad, because I don't like what they've done around there.
When the Department of Housing took over, how much did the rent go up?
It went up into the hundreds. We were paying about 90-something dollars a week, which was cheap, we admit, but we used to upkeep the house, the place itself, you know. We didn't ask him, unless it was something with plumbing, he wasn't allowed to do or anything like that, we'd have to get the maritime to do it. But otherwise, we'd paint it, and we altered it, tiled the bathroom, built the kitchen in, everything like that, made the entrance from inside to go into the bathroom and things. But the Housing Commission didn't take that into account. They didn't care about that. They just saw that that's how we were, and because he was working a good wage and overtime. And so they went up, and we were paying, you know, over $200 a week to $300 a week, and that's 20 years ago.
So it went up from 90 to about 300 a week?
It went up gradually. Mm-hmm. Till I lasted 10 years, or about nine years I lasted there. And then in the last couple of years when the Housing Commission took over, it spoiled everything, you know. Because another thing, we were comparing to the people who didn't want to work, and people, you know, like, were paying, might be $30 a week for the same sort of places we were paying. There wasn't only me, there was a lot of us that went from there because of that.
How would you compare the two regimes, so the Maritime Services Board regime as landlords and the Department of Housing regime?
The Maritime were very good to this extent that they considered if you did something to the house, they appreciated what you did. The Housing Commission didn't. We looked after it, and we used to keep them clean. The fronts of it used to be spotless, the street, and that, and looked after the places. But they didn't care. They didn't worry. To me, you know, like, if you wanted something done, like, all right, you had to ask permission off the Maritime if you wanted somebody to come and stay with you, and you give them the reason why. Say one of his relatives want to come and stay for a couple of weeks, you tell them, you know, that they were staying. But the Housing Commission let you stay, but you'd have to go through all the red tape about the place to do it, you know. And that. But with the Maritime, say like us, they would let us continue on into the place, you know, stay there till we finished, you know. I think the Housing Commission don't consider that now.
Just make an announcement. That's the end of tape number MPFH21, side A. This is the start of tape number MP21, MPFH21, side B. So what was the effect of the Department of Housing coming in on the whole community, would you say?
It moved a lot of people my age out. You know, chased us out, I said. That's my opinion of it, you know, because you probably interviewed a few other ones that I grew up with, and they probably told you the same thing, you know. And to me, I don't think it was fair what they did. But as I said, I'm not sorry now. I just feel sorry for the people who stays around there and things like that, you know, because please explain with them, and, you know, if you knocked the place about, that didn't matter to them, you know.
Now, the way I work it out, you were at Millers Point from 1930 when you were born.
Yeah.
Till about 1985, was it?
Yeah, till I came out
55
here.
Years yeah. In Millers Point.
In Millers Point.
So do you still identify with Millers Point? Yeah. What sort of sense of place do you have about Millers Point?
When people say something to me, I say, I come from the rocks. That's how it is. My heritage is the rocks. Eh? But you live in Brightley Sands. I said, I don't care. I come from the rocks.
Why don't you say Millers Point instead of the rocks? Because it was a different place.
Yeah, but But that's what it's known as now. If you tell them Miller's Point, half of them don't know. They know it as the Rocks. Eh? But one time, if you said you lived in Miller's Point, oh, fancy living there. That's what they used to say to us. Fancy living there, you know. Miller's Point, Piermont, and Belmain. People didn't want to know you. That's how it was. If you said you come from those three places, they didn't want to know you. But now, they're jumping over each other to get there. I laugh when I see the prices and things of it, because my other grandmother lived in Belmain. Eh? I was telling Don, his sister was in Belmain Hospital in the rehabilitation, and we went over and I was telling him, oh, just down there was where my uncle, but Dad's brother lived, and just down there was where my grandmother lived, you know, and Dad's mum and things like that.
So is it very strong in your mind still, all your life at Miller's Point?
It's still strong in my mind. I'm still a point.
So when I say the word Miller's Point, what kind of memories come back in your mind? What do you think about when I say Miller's Point?
My childhood, my friendship, you know, and growing up around there, you know, and people that I knew had passed on around there and everything like that. When I moved out here, I was a bit on the sad side, and my son said to me, he said, Mum, he said, the people, he said, that you know are moving away. The people that are older than you weren't last there. He said, they'll be gone. And he said, the new ones coming won't be bothered with you. And I bet you Flo's told you that.
Yes,
Flo has the same opinion as me.
That's right.
Yeah.
You have a son and a daughter, don't you?
Son and a daughter.
What are they doing?
My son is a Catholic priest, after me poking fun at the Catholic kids. and what's the name? My daughter is a flight attendant with Qantas, and she's almost been 20 years there in February. And my son's up at the moment, he's up at the church at Asquith and Barara. He has the two churches up there. He was 23 years ordained 2 weeks ago.
Quite an achievement.
Yeah. And what's the name? He was meant to be. You can see how he was, you know. But it just shows you how fate turns around on you what happens.
Well, that's right. You can't make fun of anyone anymore.
Can you get paid back?
Yeah. Looking at Miller's Point as a sort of a place where the wharfies used to work and the ships used to come in, how important do you think all that was to the economy of the city of Sydney?
It was important there. I don't know why they're moving it. You know, because we drove down through Port Botany yesterday and I saw the trucks and I'm thinking to myself, we used to have them down the point, you know, and that we used to have them down, they used to come up from Hickson Road, up Munn Street, around into Argyle Place, around that footpath, along to the Palisade and with all the wool on it and go up to the wool store, you know, the trucks like them. We used to have those and then we'd have the other ones going down Dalgetty Hill with the other load on. It was good, you know. It was really good. And now, I don't know. It has really changed.
What would you say was one of the most significant events that happened at Miller's Point? What were the really big milestones for the area?
What do you mean?
Like, you know, big events that happened in Miller's Point when things changed. What would it be?
The changing was when they pulled those houses down in Merriman Street and they blocked off Munn Street and they built that horrible big tower up there. It spoiled. That street used to be so nice, really nice street, you know, up that street. And then they blocked our street off, Munn Street, and that horrible big tree they got in front of those two flats. You know, we used to be able to sit on the veranda and look right up. My mother could see me coming home from school. As soon as I come around the corner on Watson's Road, and cast out to come down the hill, she'd be watching me all the way down. and that, but that's how we were, you know, like that. But I think that was the worst part. When they built those wharves, you know, the other wharves used to be so nice, old, really old, but all right, that's progress and things like that. But they spoiled the point. When they did that and the Housing Commission stepped in, there was no, Miller's Point died, that's what I reckon.
Now, traffic's increased, of course, a lot in the years. What was it like when you were very young? Was there much traffic?
We used to play in the street. You know, so, you know, if there was something coming, they'd take care, but it wasn't busy. You know, we wouldn't play when the trucks were around there with the, you know, loading with the wharves and the things like that. But after they'd knock off, you know, from 5 o'clock till 9 o'clock at night, we'd be there, and weekends and that. And the shops used to close at 12:30 on a Saturday. So you could go for a walk in town, look at the shop windows or... and things like that, you know. You knew 12:30 there was no shops. And Paddy's Market, it's where it is now, down the Haymarket, but that used to be good. It used to have all the stalls outside of a night time, Friday night, and that, and it was, it's not Paddy's Market now, but it is. It was much better. The fish markets used to be down the back of there. Yeah, they've moved the fish markets down. That's all updated now from there.
I guess you wouldn't recognise Miller's Point today from your youth. It must have changed so much, didn't it?
It has changed. It has changed. And those, what they're doing to those wharves around there with the units on it, putting units here and units there, they've took the history look away from it. Because down in Windmill Street, as you go down Kent Street to the bottom of Windmill Street, they've put a building there where it was a vacant allotment and a maritime store, I think, underneath. But you could see right out, now it's built up, and it's the horriblest looking thing. It doesn't even suit the area. Because my daughter, last time I went to the reunion, she picked me up and she drove me down there, and she said to me, have a look at that eyesore. And that's what we called it. It shouldn't never have been built there. And what they're building the flats out with the... you know, building on top of this and on top of that. And to me, they're putting more traffic now into Miller's Point than what we had years ago. And
What are your views, Betty, on the future of Miller's Point? What would you like to see happen there?
I'd like to see them stop building those units. You know, taking the look, they've took the look away. They've taken the look away. God, years ago... as you know, when I was much younger, we used to argue about the doing the West Rocks, you know. And now they're doing where I used to live, Miller's Point. You know, the high rise, we tried to stop the high rise. And they've just gone ahead and done what we fought for with that Jack Mundy and that, you know, with all the trouble that we had with the paddy wagons and things like that and the trouble. No, they've spoiled it, definitely spoiled it. And they don't look after it the way that the Maritime looked after it.
Do you go often back to Miller's Point to get a nostalgic look at it?
No, I don't want to. I went back, I go back for the reunion, and I went back for the restoration of St Bridget's Church. They restored it to its old way. Now they're doing the school upstairs. The little school upstairs. But otherwise, I don't go back. I used to go back the first Saturday in November they had it. Bushels used to have a reunion with my aunt. She used to love to go in to that, you know. And of course, being working there for years herself and being one of the four ladies there. And I used to go and we'd go and pick her up, my husband and I, from Cronulla, and we'd drive her in, and she'd have a lovely afternoon. You'd take a plate, and she didn't want anybody else's food, only her salmon sandwiches. I had a watch to see where they put her plate of salmon sandwiches so she could go and get her own food and that. But they were in there, some of them were in their 90s and things. That's finished now because they were, you know, a lot of passed on and there's nobody to carry on with it. And that used to be held in the Garrison Hall of Trinity Church. And we'd take a collection up amongst us, and we put the donation, what we collected, we give to the minister there for the use of the hall, because he let us use the hall. But that's the only time I went back. If I have to go back to St. Bridget's for something, I'll go back, or but otherwise just go back and walk around, no way.
So you'd rather remember it as it was?
My memory is what I've got, and that is hideous. To me, they've spoilt it.
Okay, Betty, I think we're coming towards the end of our interview here. Is there anything else you want to talk about Miller's Point that we can put on record?
Oh, there were only the old tram shed. It used to be around there. The old wooden one used to be on the roadway, and the trams used to go around in by it. It used to have a couple of steps that went up into it, and it was wooden one, and they pulled that down years and years ago. I was a kid when they pulled that down. But that used to be such a nice thing, you know. It was different, and that stuck in my mind as well, you know.
Where was it, Betty?
Where the Abraham Mott Hall is, and it's got the Senior Citizen Centre it is now, and it's got the bus shed. Well, the bus shed, that was all clear footpath, okay? The trams used to come around like that, and the wooden one was there. As you come down, You couldn't drive straight up the hill, you know what I mean? There, it was an old wooden one. It was really, really, it stuck in my mind because it was a couple of steps up, and it was a real old-time shed, you know, and that.
Well, Betty, thank you very, very much for sharing all those great memories with us, and you've made a very valuable contribution to this oral history project by telling us so many details and remembering so well. It's really wonderful. So thanks a lot. On behalf of the Department of Housing, I want to thank you too. So I'll just close the interview. This is the end of the interview with Betty Borg, and the end of tape number MPFH 21, side B.